There's a lot of people running around that don't stay the night, never come through town. And some other people running about that don't take the time to suss you out. Still some of us every night we make a toast to you, like isn't it nice that the body and the presence of mind is big old for you. Let there be light.
Hi, this is Sarah Phillips with Knight Energy Services, conducting my first The Crude Life podcast with Jennifer McIntyre. So I have two basic missions why I accepted this role for The Crude Life. The first is it has a lot to do with women in the industry. So the Women's Energy Network is by far the most impressive networking group that I'm in. And I just wanted to showcase these oftentimes overlooked members of the industry. So that's my first goal. And my second goal is to reform the oil and gas and the energy's reputation. So like women, the industry is actually counterintuitively nurturing and life-giving. So let me just explain to you how I met Jennifer McIntyre. So when I first started at Knight Energy Services a year ago, I had just moved from North Dakota being a field engineer, and I was trying to learn how to transition from being a nerdy field engineer to an outspoken sales account manager. So I was told by Matt Hill, a coworker in Oklahoma, to connect with her. So I gave her my number on LinkedIn, and she called me a couple days later, and we talked on the phone for like an hour. But little did I know at that time the responsibilities she had and how many boards she sat on. So time passed by, and I had a bunch of meetings with clients, and literally everybody knew who she was. So she has a reputation in our region for being one of the most resourceful and connected people in the industry. She's also been incredibly friendly and helpful to me, and I just wanted to share this impressive woman's story.
Aww.
So, J-Mac, introduce yourself and tell us who you're with.
So my name is Jennifer McIntyre Morris.
Morris.
And I, position-wise, am vice president for a company called RLI Solutions. Our field entities are L&L Pipeline, Accelerated Logistics, and Service and Supply. So we do pipeline and civil construction. We have a full logistics company, and then we provide mechanical field repair services for heavy equipment. I also own my own company. It is called NMW LLC, and it is a registered WBE, national registered WBE, and we specialize in oil field consulting. So we work with larger companies on a joint venture basis, helping them fulfill their WBE requirements. We're also working on a well plugging program for the state of Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
And we're in the final stages of that as well. So
that's how I started plugging in.
Oh,
I was
really?
A safety coordinator on plugging wells for Coastal Drilling. It's umbrellaed under Shaft Drillers International.
Coastal around here, all over the place. They plug wells for Range all the time. And CNX.
Yeah, that's where I fell in love with the oil field. That's funny. So besides your job, what organizations are you in and what positions do you hold?
So I've been involved with the American Association of Drilling Engineers Appalachian chapter for probably 6 or 7 years now. I actively hold their director of marketing and communications position. The Appalachian Pipeliners Association, I've been involved with that board for probably about 5 years. I'm one of the longest standing remaining board members for that organization. And again, I hold, this year I'm director of marketing and communication. Previously, I looked after membership for them. And I also hold the marketing and communications position for Women's Energy Network Pittsburgh chapter. And then I hold a chair position for that same organization for their West Virginian chapter as well.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're nuts. Like, how do you manage your time so you can balance all your positions and your, like, three jobs?
I think that I'm super strict with my schedule and my time. So if you look at my diary, I literally have set times for every single task that I have to accomplish. And you really have to learn that regardless of being finished with that task or not, when your time is up with that task, you're done until that time comes up again. And I'm super strict with that. It's much better to be proactive than reactive, especially in this industry. It's so easy to go off course because so much stuff is constantly coming at you. And of course, everything needs done yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Everything doesn't need done yesterday. It's getting people to slow down enough to tell you what's a true emergency, what truly needs prioritized, and then sticking with that strict schedule that you've set for yourself, or you will go crazy.
Literally. How did you learn how to do that? Like, make the diary, and how do you have the discipline to stick to it?
Because if you don't, you will very quickly spiral out of control, and you'll drive yourself crazy.
With all the tasks that you have
Absolutely.
To accomplish?
Yeah.
So have you always, like, had a pretty heavy workload your
mm-hmm.
whole life?
Yeah, absolutely. I had my first job when I was 12. I had work release from school, and at 13, I was working at Giant Eagle. I was the oldest of six kids, so summers, even at 11 and 12 years old, my parents both worked, and I looked after all of the kids. I cooked, I cleaned. Looking back now, like when I think of my kids at 12, I'm like, there is no way in this earth that I would allow them to do that. But it wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't unnatural for me. It was just
how
the way that it
were.
Was. Yeah, exactly. And my youngest brother was in diapers still.
Were you changing them?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was mom all summer long, and then I had my job, and I had school, and
so it feels natural to you to have a heavy workload.
Yeah, absolutely. I would think something was seriously wrong if I didn't. Like, that's when I start to question myself.
Yeah.
Because you're like,
you
okay.
Feel like empty.
Yeah. I mean,
you would?
Yeah. Even vacations are hard, you know, because
you're not relaxing.
Exactly.
Because you're not accomplishing
something.
But it's
also my passion. So it's not like I'm a workaholic and I don't enjoy it. I enjoy what I do. So it's okay. It's like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's my hobby as well as my job. It's not painful.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah. That makes sense. So we kind of touched on this already, but how do you balance your work life with your personal life?
So it's hard. I mean, I've definitely learned that, let's put it this way, I've been married 3 times.
Yeah.
So I think that's a testament to it. The man that I'm married to now has infinite patience. He's also familiar with the industry, which I think definitely helps. And that being said, friendships with individuals who aren't in the industry have proven very difficult. Retaining friendships. I mean, I look at like people that I went to high school with. I went to a really small school, and they're all still friends. They've all married each other. They all do Christmas parties together. And they used to invite me, but after you cancel like the 3rd or 4th time because something comes up with work, like those invitations don't really come anymore. So, because they don't understand. They don't understand the demands and the priorities of what it is that you do. So the majority of my friends also work in the industry because they're the only people that like you can literally call and cancel lunch 15 minutes before you're supposed to be there, and they understand, right?
Mm-hmm. I can totally relate to that,
yeah.
Especially with the high school friends.
They don't,
and
understand.
Spouses, right?
Yeah.
Like you need, if you're in the, I don't know, my husband really appreciates that about me and vice versa, that we understand that you have, sometimes there are time sensitive things that you just can't put off.
You cannot, I've gotten up from dinner tables on Christmas Day and been like, really enjoyed cooking this meal for you. It was really great to eat in 15 minutes, but I've got to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And everybody's like, okay, mom, we'll see you when you get back. I mean, it is what it is. You have to have, you do end up surrounding yourself with people that understand.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult to explain to people that don't work in it.
Yeah. But then it's fun to be around, to surround yourself with people because you can always talk about the oil and gas industry,
yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So obviously you're a high achiever and you've developed quite the reputation around here. So I always tell my stepkids, you can't be number one unless you're a little odd. So what decisions have you made against the grain that have led you to where you are now?
I think I've actually made decisions against the grain of our actual industry itself. So we're kind of famous for working hard and playing hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely do the working hard part. And the playing hard part, I have definitely not learned to steer clear of, but made the conscious decision to be that designated driver for everybody, or to wait until everybody's maybe not going to remember that you're leaving the room and then go to the bathroom and not come back.
Yeah.
And that was a decision both personally for myself, for my reputation, but also for that family that supports me. But I think it's an uncommon decision.
Oh, definitely. You definitely stand out whenever you're at these
events. And
people
comment on it. I mean, they'll be like,
I've
Jen never drinks.
I've commented on it.
Yeah, exactly. Jen never drinks. Well, I do. But it tends to be when I'm at home with my husband or my friends or whatever. It's not in a working environment.
Right.
Especially for ladies, I think that even if you are a completely clean slate, it can lead to conversations about you that you maybe don't want it to be had.
Oh, yeah. Those conversations, especially if you work in the field, like, I don't know if this is politically correct, but they're inevitable.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a female out in the field, conversations will be had about you.
Correct. So
it doesn't matter if you're a nun.
Exactly.
You know?
So don't give them any more reason to have those conversations.
Yeah.
That's definitely been something that I've lived by. And it's been appreciated. I mean, the majority of people that have guided me in this industry have been a lot of the older guys that have been in the industry for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it may take them a super long time to trust me, but it's definitely worth waiting for that. And I think that they end up becoming close to me and trusting me because I am not the fun time girl. I am pretty serious about what I do. They know who I go home to at night, and that I have kids, and I have animals that I look after, and all these other responsibilities. It definitely helps crack their shell a lot quicker.
Yeah.
You have that demeanor, right?
Yeah. And those old-time guys, they're the best. They have the most knowledge. I know. They're my favorite.
Yeah.
They have so much knowledge. They have so much to share. And then once you do develop that trust, they do share.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and they're fun. So how did you stumble in the oil and gas industry?
So I was actually doing corporate relocations for a number of years in Scotland to start. And there is a large oil and gas population in Aberdeen, obviously mm-hmm. drilling in the North Sea. And I just started gaining a lot of oil and gas clientele. So I've moved guys to Dubai, Australia, helped them with their work permits, trying to figure out how we're going to get their massive truck with whatever inch tires over to Dubai, and does the closet fit 500 pairs of shoes for their wife, all of that kind of stuff. How do I roll my kids in school? And I don't know, when you're intimately dealing with people's day-to-day lives like that, helping them opening bank accounts and everything else, you get to know them really well. And when things really picked up here in the South Point area, we made the decision to move back. And I did the same thing here locally. So I kind of built up knowing individuals in that industry as South Point increased. Range moved up and Noble moved up. And eventually they're like, you're wasted doing this. You need to come and work with us out here. And Noble
That's
actually
cool.
flew
so
me down to their head office.
You.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to move down there, which in this industry, it's nothing to move like that. I was like, yeah, I can't move my family again. We already moved from another country here. This is home. I'm not moving again. But yeah, I did eventually move over into the field from that. And I still bump into guys out there that I moved to, like, Australia or Dubai. I'll walk in a trailer and I'll be like, what are you doing here? They're like, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be in Scotland. And I'm like, no. Why? You're supposed to be in Dubai. Yeah.
Why'd you move to Scotland? What brought you there?
So my first husband was Scottish. I actually met him right out of high school. I lost my mom in my senior year.
Yeah.
And it kind of turned my life upside down. I had a full scholarship to Chatham University, which that was my intention. That was an all-girls Catholic school. And
what
I had a full ride. I was actually going to go I wanted to be a political speechwriter.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I initially wanted to do. I had a scholarship from the Daughters of the American Revolution, and I had the Rachel Carson Book Award scholarship to go to that college. and then my mom passed, and I did spiral a little bit out of control. All of a sudden, I was the head, female head of a household. I mean, I'd kind of done it before,
not but just
I
for the summer.
Was.
Yeah.
I was the one. I had all these younger brothers and sisters to turn to, and quite frankly, my dad asked me not to go. And he needed me at home, and I made the choice to stay.
Yeah.
And I did that for about a year until my dad got on his feet a little bit more. And in that time, I met my first soon-to-be husband, who was Scottish. He was actually, his stepdad was a U.S. naval officer stationed in Annapolis. And I fell pregnant, and healthcare is free over there, so I applied to colleges. I packed the same bag that you packed to go on vacation for 2 weeks, and I moved to a new country at 19.
With your first husband?
With my first husband and a two-month-old baby.
In a different country?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody.
So you were 19 when mm-hmm. that happened, and your mom passed away when you were 18.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that happened, like, that must have been extremely difficult to have that many, like, life changes.
Yeah, but everything happens for a reason, right?
And that's why you are where you are now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the reasons, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that marriage fell apart relatively quickly. When you're 19, I came from a Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't intended to necessarily get married, but getting married really wasn't an option. It's just the way that I was raised, obviously. So we did. And but when you're 19, you have no clue who you are. The person you're with has no clue who they are. And quite quickly, I realized it was not for the best.
Yeah.
And we separated. And I can remember. So I was a single mom at 21 in a foreign country with no family. And things were really tight. I decided to go back to school, and that's when I went to Glasgow School of Art. So I was a student single mom in a foreign country.
Oh my gosh.
And I lived in, over there it's called a room and kitchen, so it's literally a bed in a kitchen with a small room off of it, and then internal plumbing that had been put in at a later date because those buildings were so old that the bathroom was in the back courtyard at a previous point. I had no refrigerator. I used to keep my milk and my eggs and my butter on the windowsill because it was cold enough that it would stay for at least a day.
Oh my gosh.
I had no vacuum. I brushed the carpets on my hands and knees with a stiff bristled brush. I can remember doing that. I had no washing machine. I washed all of our clothes in the bathtub, like stomping on them like you do making wine. And there was one night that I had a can of beans, I'll never forget it, and I had the two slices at the end of a loaf of bread, and one of them was the butt end that's disgusting. And I'm like, do I split this, or do I give this to my son?
Oh, no.
And I gave it to him, and I was like, I am not going to be doing this for the rest of my life. Like,
yeah.
This is not what I was destined for. Like, so I'm going to do everything in my power to have this not be our situation. Because I think a lot of things happen to everybody, whether
yeah.
it's abuse or alcoholism or a death in your family. You can either let that form who you are, or you can let it inspire you to be what you want to be.
Right.
One of two things.
Right.
And I chose to let it inspire me to do something better than let it define who I was, because it wasn't who I was.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually leads to another question that I wanted to ask you. So most highly successful people have one pivotal failure in their life that skyrockets their success, right? Like one in three U.S. presidents have had a parent die by the time that they were 18, which is similar to you. I mean, you were 18, right?
Yep.
So was your mom's death, what was the pivotal time in your life where you said no more, that you really think skyrocketed your success?
I don't think it was like a single event. I came from a super hardworking family. Like, that wasn't a choice. It's just who we were. Like I said, had my first job at 12 and then for an actual external employer at 13. I've never not had a job a single day in my life, no matter what's happening in my personal life, no matter when I was going to school and everything else. I've always had a job. I think there have been lots of things in my life that have pushed me further forward in that path to get to where I want to be. But I can't say that there's been one single pivotal moment, because I think we all have lots of those moments that kind of shape us and shift and, mm-hmm. and define that path. But my drive's always been super high to kind of do something. That's why I wanted to be a political speechwriter. So I'd never wanted to be the politician that everybody looked at. I wanted to be the person that wrote the words that that politician said that went down in history. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Who would, otherwise you're just kind of a puppet, right?
Correct.
You wanted to be the brain to the puppet.
I wanted to be the one that actually made the difference.
Right. That's cool.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what qualities do you admire in people, and what are your pet peeves?
Integrity and honesty.
Right.
The two most important things. The two most important things that you can have as a human being, and the two hardest things to get back when you lose.
Right. That's a good point.
I say to the field guys that work for me all of the time, I literally do not care what happens, ever. Just tell me the truth. Even if you've made a mistake, even if you have consciously made the choice to make a mistake, tell me the truth.
Right.
Because if I don't have, I'll have your back, but I'm going to take whatever you tell me is gospel, and I am going to fight for whatever that is. So you better damn well make sure it's not a lie. It's just so important. And if you do it, you're going to be gone, because I'm never going to trust you again. It's the most important thing.
Have you ever been burned really bad by somebody who's lied to you?
Oh, I think we all have, particularly in this industry. I think.
For sure.
There's an ingrained fear in people, in everybody in our industry. Let's face it, mistakes can be really costly.
Sorry, I'm just checking on you too.
Mistakes can be really costly in this industry. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of high stakes, high stress situations. So I think everybody's constantly terrified of making a mistake, being the one that causes an injury, that causes something to fail, that costs the company a great deal of money. So there is a lot of predisposition to not necessarily tell the truth.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to break, but it's super important. So integrity and honesty, those are the things I admire. Pet peeves would be breaking both
the opposite.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Definitely. I think the majority of the other stuff, I'm pretty easy to get on with. I don't know. Yeah, the opposite of those two things.
Yeah. Yeah, those are definitely important, and a lot of people do fear the retaliation from telling the truth if they did make a mistake, you know?
And you see it get worse in downturns. Have you noticed that?
No.
The amount of backstabbing and dishonest behavior that increases during a downturn is unbelievable.
I mean, that makes
people
sense.
People do and say things that you're like, you would never expect that out of them. But it's like it's survival of the fittest. And people go into this panic mode that makes them do and say things that they wouldn't necessarily do normally. It's kind of strange to see it happen.
Yeah, because people are afraid for their lives, and then they compromise.
Their livelihoods, their families, they compromise.
That is what shows you the character, their character, right?
Correct.
Is at those times when you struggle.
Not.
When, yeah.
Yep.
Do you keep your integrity whenever you are tested?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what separates people. But I was just thinking about your last question and how you were talking about how you've worked since you were 12 and you've always had a job every day of your life. And I'm reading this book that it talks about achievement and how achievement is the secret to happiness. So do you believe in that? Like, a lot of times when people are depressed, they lay low, they don't do anything, they watch Netflix, it's a downward spinning spiral, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So happiness, could you look at it as instead of doing nothing, you do something, and every time you do something, you get happier, and then once you get happier, you achieve more, and then it's an upward spinning spiral?
I would agree, and I think it's achieving those. There's definitely an element of adrenaline or serotonin in achieving anything, whether it's a big goal or a small goal, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're constantly setting those goals on a personal level or on a work level when you're constantly achieving, then that's almost, it can become addictive.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. You're constantly wanting to meet the next whatever you've set yourself, you know?
So what do you think the secret is? Like, obviously, so if achieving is the secret to happiness and laying on the couch makes you feel like crap, then what makes you make the decision to achieve rather than just do nothing for you? Is it because you're a high achiever?
Sitting on the couch has never been an option. I think it's also partially that I've always had somebody, or for as long as I can really remember, someone depend on me. Mm-hmm. I had younger brothers and sisters. My mom was sick from the time I was 12 until she passed. So for a lot of that time, she was undergoing treatment and, you know what I mean? There were things mm-hmm. to do. We had to pull together as a family to support her during that time. So I've always had someone depend on me. And then I had my own kids. I started really young. And I had people that depended on me. And that's not a bad thing, but it certainly creates something bigger than just yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Sitting on the couch really isn't an option when you have somebody else that's depending on you.
So you've really never had that choice.
No, why? I haven't, and I don't regret it either.
Oh, yeah.
You know, God has given me those people in my life for a reason, and maybe it is because I am who I am, and I do want to provide for them. Maybe that's why he picked me. I don't know what the reason is. I would never trade those people for anything or those circumstances for anything in the world, but
it is weird how God, like, gives you trials and tests
Absolutely.
You to push you to be somebody better.
And puts people in your life for both good and lesson teaching purposes.
Right. None of it's bad.
None of it is bad.
Yeah,
ever.
It's learning.
It is.
That's cool. Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of touched on this, but what are your personal habits? Like, do you wake up early? Do you read daily? Like, what decisions, habits, and actions make you different?
So I definitely wake up early, like extremely early.
What
but
time?
I also go to bed really early. 3:30 to 4. It just depends.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of stuff that I need to do at the house before I can leave as well.
Like what?
So I have 10 million animals. I'm the crazy oil-filled animal lady. I have lots of animals.
You have to vaccinate your goats?
Correct, yeah. Or chase chickens or peacocks or whatever the case may be. Yeah, mm-hmm. lots of that. And I don't know. I definitely start my day early. I make my bed every day. I think that's super important. It drives me crazy when the kids don't. There's nothing worse than coming home to getting into an unmade bed.
Yeah.
I just think it like, I don't know. Your mind is completely scattered. I'm a huge proponent of lists. When I start to feel overwhelmed, I'll go and sit somewhere quiet and literally write a list, and it will include the stupidest stuff like buy new toothpaste, and it'll include like do the exit interview for so-and-so that, you know, that's having to leave the company. It'll have literally absolutely everything on it. Because again, it's a sense of accomplishment.
Right.
As you check those things off, you're getting that adrenaline high of completing a task, of doing something.
And not only that, but the weight that you
correct.
Feel with that
you
list.
You feel it lifted off. It mm-hmm. organizes your brain. So I use a lot of lists for literally everything in my life. And I still forget stuff, but you forget a lot less if you've got it written down.
Do you have things on your list like honey-do things, like things, like write Dennis a love note or something like that, like something to increase your personal relationship?
So I don't really have to include that. That comes pretty, I'm very blessed, that comes very naturally. He's an absolutely wonderful husband. A day does not pass that he doesn't send me a text telling me how cherished and how proud and how everything he is of me. Mm-hmm. He's definitely better at it than I am. But it's just something that kind of happens naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I was thinking about making a list for my husband, like writing notes for him. I know that sounds silly, but anyway. Your husband is very, very likable.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll leave
Post-its on my steering
wheel.
Do you want to give him a little plug?
He'll do so that I have that in the morning that just says, I love you. he went into surgery and left a note for me under his pillow for me. And he was going into like an extreme surgery. He's a pretty special guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's cool. He owns 459
Customs. Mm-hmm. That's our other company. I suppose I didn't mention that one either. So I am a partner in that company as well, which is a full-service gunsmith, which kind of fits into our industry. There's one or two guys in our industry, and ladies, that like guns. So it kind of fits in really nicely together. Just one or two. Yeah. So it does fit in. But I'll tell you what, it's pretty funny. The amount of calls that I'm getting now from guys that would never answer my call is pretty good. So it goes like, I'll answer the phone. They'll be like, hey, this is so-and-so. I'll be like, I know who it is. Your number saved in my phone. Well, I was just calling to see, can your husband fix this on my grandpap's gun? I'll be like, I imagine he probably can, but let's stop and enjoy the fact that you have had to call me. Let's talk about that.
Do you say that?
Yeah, every time.
That's awesome.
I'm like, shut up. I'm like, just saying, I've called you 6 times and now you're calling me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it definitely helps. Yeah. It goes hand in hand.
Tim wanted to shoot guns with Dennis while we were doing this. My husband, yeah.
They should have.
I know. I should have asked you. I'm sorry. So, like I said, my second mission is to kind of reform the narrative of the oil and gas industry. And we have a nefarious bad reputation with some people, right? But anyway, there are literally thousands of items in our everyday lives from petro products that we can count that we use, right? So do you think that women have a critical role in redefining the narrative? Like, for example, the oil and gas industry is actually nurturing and life-giving?
So I think we all do as an industry, first of all. I mm-hmm. think we are absolutely terrible at sharing the good message. And I think about this a lot. How can we get better at it? Why are we so bad at it? And I actually think one of the reasons we're so bad at it is that we're so darn busy. I'm serious.
Oh, that's a good point.
I think all of us know lots of points and facts of beneficial things and positive things about our industry, but it's having the time to actually get that message out there. I definitely think that women have a role in sharing that message. And I do think that there's a natural benefit for those types of things being shared by women because they do appeal to a broader audience. I think if you have a gentleman that's sharing that message, you're not necessarily going to get the buy-in of a stay-at-home mom or a lady who works in real estate or whatever. She's going to definitely listen to someone who she would consider her peer more than she would a gentleman in the industry. We had, at one point, I live out in the country in the middle of a lot of activity in our industry. So I had Range Resources fracking about 1,000 yards off the front of my house, literally in my front yard, because we had 13 acres. We sat right at the front of the 13 acres. The back of the 13 acres, they had a rig up. To the right-hand side of my property, I had Consol, the coal mine, putting a new air vent shaft and fan in. And to the left of my property, Trinity Pipeline was coming through, putting a pipeline in. So I literally had completions, drilling, pipeline, and coal on all four sides of my property.
Yeah.
And when that pipeline came in particular, because they're a little bit more lenient in regulations as far as taking photographs and things like that. That's the other thing. We're so secretive about our industry. We're actually really good at what we do, mm-hmm. and we're really clean and safe. So because we make it so secretive, that terrifies people. That's one of my pet peeves. So anyhow, I talked to the Trinity guys, and I said, you know what? I'm going to use my side-by-side. Me and my daughter are going to come in on this project every day and film what you guys have done. So we did it from clearing to them actually digging up the ground, putting in the pipe. They did the bore. I filmed the bore and then all of the restoration that they did. And I put it on LinkedIn. I mean, it was years ago now. And the amount of just normal average people that reached out to me and were like, that was so cool that you did that. I didn't realize that it would look so good when they were done. It looks better than when they started. And they did this and they did that. Yeah, they do.
You know? That's frustrating that people
don't realize
that.
And I had my little girl on the back of the side by, or on the back of the quad, and we're filming it every day. And, you know, and that probably lent a sense of just normal people to it as well. It was a mom and her daughter going out and looking at the pipeline every day, right?
Right.
that made it a little bit more genuine, a little bit more believable. We need to figure out more ways of doing that kind of stuff and stop being so secretive.
Yeah, I think that we have come a long way with being more transparent, you know, even from like 10 years ago.
Oh, we definitely have, but there's still a way to go.
Yeah. But I understand what you're saying. Like, people listen to a mom and a child more than, like, you know, as a high CEO at a company.
Correct.
Who has a vested
interest. It's not real to them. They're not real people.
Right.
And I think, in particular, a woman who works in the industry, they're going to be like, oh, well, she actually even knows what she's talking about. Not only is she like me,
yes.
She works in that industry, so she knows what she's talking about. I just think we definitely do have a fiduciary responsibility to become better at spreading the message of how good our industry is, particularly in an area like here. I mean, the amount of job regeneration for an area that was traditionally steel, that all of the jobs, and coal, and all of the jobs left, like an exodus. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. I don't know how anybody could complain about it. Like, go live in the middle of the woods.
They don't want to complain to me. When I was doing corporate relocations, and at that point I dressed like a girl, not like I do every day today, which I much prefer. Mm-hmm. But I was with one family, and actually I remember the guy's name, James Whalen Baker. And he and his wife came up, big jacked up truck. And he would faithfully get out of that truck and walk around and open his wife's door and help her down out of that truck every place we went and looked at. We pulled up outside of a house in Cannonsburg, actually real close to the neighborhood that you live in. Mm-hmm. And this lady from two houses down literally drops her hose in her front yard and comes beelining down. And she's getting right up in my face, and she's like, don't you dare move that oil-filled shit in this neighborhood. I'm telling you right now, we don't want those assholes moving into our neighborhood, blah, blah, blah. And I literally felt the color drain from my face and, like, the pressure build in your ears, and I'm like, I'm not going to lose my temper. I looked at that woman, like, super close to her face, and I said, listen, do you see that new fucking road outside of your house? She's like, yes. I said, that new extension that was built on your fucking school down there, do you see that too? Yes. Who do you think's paying for that? That dude and his wife right there. So you better think twice about what you're saying. She's like, I'm calling the police on you. I'm like,
Go ahead.
I'm going to throw down right in the middle of the neighborhood. No, she didn't call. We went in and looked at the house. But these poor people.
They hear the whole exchange?
Yeah, they're literally standing right next to me, like, with total shocked looks on their faces. So I'm still friends with them. I still talk to them.
They should be friends with you. You almost threw it down
in the front yard because those people didn't want us here. I'm like, yeah, yeah. But it's total, complete and utter ignorance. It's like, how can you not see the changes that have overcome this area from that industry growing like it has here? You literally have to be blind.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And I'm not sure how we fight against that. Further education. Constantly.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, even, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but, like, the pipeline's being bad for the environment. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't, like, if their ultimate goal is to have a better environment, then pipelines are the solution. You know? What else are you going to do?
I think that there is a place in energy for every type of energy, including renewables, 100%.
Yeah,
and we will move more towards that in the future, but we do not have the knowledge in those industries to successfully do what is being proposed to do and to actually carry them out efficiently. I mean, I would love to take those same people that want to run our industry out here and let them tour what a solar farm actually looks like.
Right.
I work in remediation and reclamation. The soil underneath, first of all, in West Virginia, we are going to clear virgin forests for 700 acres, virgin forest for 700, and we're going to put a solar farm out there, or a wind farm out there. That makes a load of sense. Why are we not using the wasteland from strip mining that you can't build on? Would that not be a more sensible place to put something like that? No, we're going to displace all that wildlife, and we're going to put it there. Then, rather than do what you do on the pipeline and actually dispose of everything you've removed sensibly, we're going to burn it all out there. So we'll just burn it. All that good timber, we'll burn it. That's what we'll do. And then we'll put all these solar panels so close together that nothing can grow in the soil, so that everything subsides and starts to twist, and the soil is completely destroyed. So nothing will grow underneath it. And on top of that, you're going to hook them up to big batteries that leak, that don't have containment under them, and that's going to be okay. And those batteries also have a life, by the way, and where are you planning on disposing of them?
They can't have...
There's no, we have not gotten to that point. I actually had a call with somebody on with Senator Manchin's Energy Committee and said to him, use us. We have been here doing this for a really long time, and we've worked super, super hard to become more efficient, more environmentally friendly. Don't make the mistakes that we've done. Take the people in our industry that have this knowledge and ask them, get them involved with your planning committees to put these developments in place. Why not take advantage of that knowledge that's been here since the 1800s? Like, you know, don't work against us, work together. I mean, why? I don't know.
What was their response?
No, they were like, yeah, that's a really good idea. That's a fantastic idea. I'm like, yeah, we've been doing this here a long time. We've become pretty good at it, protecting the environment. So let us help you.
Yeah.
Would that not make sense?
That's another thing people don't realize, is that we are so regulated that we have had to become...
And it's a good thing.
Yeah,
I completely agree. And we're constantly improving. But like, constantly improving.
These other industries should also be regulated.
Correct.
You know, do improve. And
absolutely,
like what you're saying, lead by example. We'll lead by example because we've been doing it for so long.
Absolutely.
Right?
Let us advise you how we can do this properly.
Yeah.
Safely.
Put containment under your solar panels.
Correct. Under your batteries that are leaking acid on the ground.
Oh, no way.
Yes. Not under the solar panels, under the batteries.
Oh, my gosh.
Correct. Which are as big as a room. I mean, these are big batteries leaking all over the ground. Or the hydraulic fluid that's flooding the ground underneath the wind turbines. Have you gone and seen those?
No.
Oh, it pours out of the bottom. You know, hydraulic fluid. What happens if we spill hydraulic fluid on a location off containment?
You get fined.
Correct.
A lot of money.
Correct. There you go. Yeah.
Okay. So that was the nurturing side. We kind of got off topic there. But... also, I believe it's definitely imperative in the field to have a rough candid approach to communication in order to like be safe, right? You can't pause and wait 100%. For a politically correct answer, right? So what benefits do you think there are with this machismo culture?
I wouldn't even say that it's that type of culture. I would say that it is... Conciseness is definitely a necessity in our industry.
Right.
And the quicker you learn that, the better. People are not being mean to you. They are trying to get something done efficiently, correctly, quickly. Right. And that can bleed over into, like, I talk to people all the time and they're like, they think I hate them. I'm like, I don't hate you. I'm just trying to convey to you what we need to do here in a quick and concise fashion so that we can move on and do what we need to do. So you definitely adopt that permanently. I don't think it's a bad
thing.
Yeah.
And then you can't like talk to other people because...
Correct. Even my kids are like, mom, no. You know what I mean? Like, you're drill sergeant, just mom. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is hard. You do kind of have to put your feelings aside. It is a necessity.
You do. But I'll tell you what, my 24-year-old son, and I won't mention the person that we were talking about, but they're going through a hard time. I don't really understand why this individual is going through a hard time. It's a peer of his, right? So another young 20-something-year-old. And I'm like, they need to suck it up. Like, I do not understand what the issue is here. Like, they need to just get on with life. Like, and he turned around to me and he said, Mom, not everybody is as strong as you. You need to realize that. And I'm telling you what, he checked me. I stopped and I was like... You probably are right. And I'm not being big-headed about that, but it just made me take a breath and a break and be like...
Try to understand
correct.
The way that other people
yeah,
are.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? There are some times that I probably do need to slow down, explain things a little bit better, be a little bit more understanding, because you adopt that and it carries over into your everyday life, right?
Yeah.
That method of communication.
Yes, it does. And then it is difficult to
correct.
Communicate with other people.
Yeah.
Once you are immersed in that culture.
Yeah.
You know? I like it.
I do too.
Right?
I prefer it that way. Like, I like when people talk to me. I know exactly where I stand and what I'm doing.
Exactly. You don't have to guess. You don't have to know if they're saying exactly what they mean, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. So what advice do you have to women who just entered this industry or are thinking about entering it?
So I've mentored a lot of women that have come into the industry.
Yeah.
I would say that probably a good 75 to 80% of them don't last longer than a couple of years, which I think is a real shame.
Do you think it's because of what we were just talking about? The putting your feelings aside?
I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that women in the oil field now are very different than the role that a lot of women played in the oil field 10 years ago,
yeah.
15 years ago.
Right.
And a lot of those historic guys have one of two things. Either they want to assume you're like that woman in the oil field 15 years ago, which is something I'm not interested in.
Right.
Or they want nothing to do with you because
right.
they assume that
you are.
That
was my biggest challenge when
correct?
I started sales.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that whenever I was engineering, supervising the rigs.
I won't name the company man.
There's one in particular?
There was one in particular that I love, and I adore him. Like, he's one of my favorite people now. I went out to his rig 6 times and over like a 2-week period, and he would not let me on. And I had people working on that location, like literally working on that location. I had to talk to him about stuff. There was a reason. I wasn't just calling for the sake of calling.
Right.
And finally, I called him and I said, I really have to come up there and talk to you. And I got up to the trailer, walked in to the section right before, like, the little half door. And he's like, I'm going to let you behind here. He said, you're going to sit your ass in that seat and you're going to wait a minute. I'm like, yes, sir. Okay. He goes out and he goes and grabs a random roughneck and brings him in and sits him in the seat next to me. And he's like, this dude's going to sit here for the entirety of your visit here. What do you have to say? Because he's worried. I mean, how
and
horrible.
And you understand it, right?
I totally
so
understand
it's not like
why.
That made you mad.
Didn't make me mad at
no.
all.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what I'm saying. So you've got these two different mentalities, and I just felt terrible for that man. Like,
mm-hmm.
And it took time, but to this.
And you also understood why you felt that way because of
correct.
What used to happen.
Yes, absolutely. Correct. But after, you know, time, and we did a good job, and I was always there, and I constantly answered my phone at 2 o'clock in the morning, and whatever tasks and whatever he put in front of me were done, he's like one of my best friends now. You know, it takes time, but I totally understand why he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that long ago. So you have to convey, when a new woman is coming to this industry, you have to convey that history to them in a way that isn't going to scare them away, but is honest enough that they truly understand what they're going to come up against out there. Because otherwise they're in for a serious shock. And it could be lots of different types of shocks, and I think we both know that. Do you know what I mean? It could be lots of different things that could happen, but they need to be prepared for that.
For more, what are you talking about? Like more women entering the industry and being
I'm talking
prepared?
About young women who enter the industry need to be prepared of about the history of what part women played 15, 20 years ago in the industry.
So that they know how to handle
correct.
It. Like the
and it's not a shock
guy
to them.
That you dealt with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it doesn't bother them.
Yes, it can't.
Mm-hmm.
It can't. We're still working against those stereotypes. But there are also benefits to being, definite benefits to being a female, particularly on the account management or sales side of things. So you have those guys that are much more reticent to talk to you. But I guarantee you, once you prove your worth to them, they are 20 times more loyal to you than they are to a male counterpart. And that's a horrible thing to say, but you have worked 20 times harder to prove yourself, and they do realize that. They eventually
I've
realize it.
I've experienced that
and they
completely.
Are so, you, they then feel that you are like their granddaughter or their daughter, and they would literally lay down and die for you. I mean, that if you are good at your job, those are the type of relationships you eventually get to. And I don't know if all of our male counterparts get to that point, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah.
And people ask me, how are you so close to them? Well, I literally slogged my guts out until I was accepted and he saw worth in me.
And you
didn't have to do that because he already assumed that you were worth something when you walked out here. I have to prove it.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good point. Like, you do have to prove your worth. Mm-hmm. But,
and that's okay. Like, I'm okay with that. I kind of like it.
Yeah,
it's like a challenge.
Me too. Well, not only that, but you know ahead of time when those guys are like that to you,
yeah,
that they will eventually be one of your most loyal, like, closest friends.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I tell them all the time, I'm like, gotcha, bitch. And they're like, yeah, shut up. Right? I'm like, I gotcha.
Yeah, that's happened to me. I mean, even in my short year, like, I've had people where at first I cried because I was getting acclimated to the whole.
And that's why girls give up.
Stage. I cried, and then I went home, and then I had a fire burn under my ass, and I was like, this guy is going to be my friend, you know? And, like,
I am good at my job.
Mm-hmm.
I am justifiable. You know what I mean?
And you're not going to stop me.
Correct.
Yeah, just because I'm a female.
Yep.
Yeah. But I also understand it. Like you said, like, it's crazy how much I completely identify with a lot of the things that you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So we're about done here. Is there anything else you would like to share?
No, thanks for talking with me.
Yeah, this has been so much fun. I love this.
Me too.
Yeah, it was a really good interview, I think. For my first one.
You did good.
Thank you. So did you. Really enjoyed it. All right.
Giving me a heartbeat, making me never wanna leave. But let the world judge, cause they don't see. 5,000 candles, 5,000 candles burning bright on the light you could endo. 5,000 candles here at night. 5,000 candles, 5,000 candles burning bright on the light you could endo. 5,000 candles here at night. It's only your face and there's soon enough I'll see that I'm crazy for loving you the way that I do. Because who could love somebody like you? They say you're too damn small and I won't pretend it don't matter at all. But no matter what the trouble ahead, I still won't regret this time that I spent. Sad to behold, nothing you could do would make me go. We'll let the world judge what they don't know. Giving me a heartbeat, making me never wanna leave. But let the world judge, cause they don't see. 5,000 candles, 5,000 candles burning bright on the light you could endo. 5,000 candles here at night. 5,000 candles, 5,000 candles burning bright on the light you could endo. 5,000 candles here at night. I wanna know who did that. Show me the match that lit that sky. Ode to the light that caught my eye. Never could forget that. Steam in my breath and I.